19th, and we are going to talk about and commemorate the April 19th revolution. It's also known in Korean as 4.19 혁명. So this you might know as just 4.19. Holds a very special place in Korea's recent history and democracy movement. Let's find out what this is all about. Why is this day so important? What's the history behind this movement? We have invited to the airwaves Andrew Jackson. He's an associate professor of Korean studies at Monash University. Let's say hi to him. Hi, welcome to our program.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on.
Yes, absolutely. First, can we talk about Lee Seung-man, or Seung-man Rhee as he's known, the president at the time? How did he rise up and become the first so-called president of the Republic of Korea?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, he was very prominent. He had been prominent in the nationalist exile movement. And he formed the Korean National Association in Hawaii during the colonial period, during the Japanese occupation of Korea. He's a very charismatic leader. He's very well educated. He had a PhD from Harvard, from Princeton, I think. And he was a phenomenal speaker of English. He was very fiercely independent nationalistic, anti-communist, and protective of Korean national sovereignty. So there was a lot to attract Korean voters, and that's why they supported him. And there was a lot to attract the American administration, and that's why they gave him his support. So that's how he got to the top, really.
And then what happened as he became president? He was president for several years, of course.
Yeah.
But if we can kind of move forward a little bit and talk about what happened in the years leading up to 1960, of course, that's very important. But what happened in the latter years?
Well, I mean, he had some qualities, but he also had some issues, you might say. He sort of had dictatorial inclinations. He didn't like to relinquish his grip on power, and he engineered greater powers for himself constantly as president in 1952, 54, 56, 58. I mean, quite regularly. And he did this in various ways. He intimidated opponents. He imprisoned the National Assembly politicians at one point. He really sort of didn't like people arguing against him and standing up against him.
Right.
And you know, he probably wasn't a very pleasant man to be with, let's put it that way. And he certainly wasn't very pleasant to people who opposed him politically. So he engineered various ways, intimidation and, as I said, rigging elections for him to hold on to power.
And what happened in 1960, though?
Well, in 1960, there were elections around March 1960, presidential elections, and his Liberal Party, the Chaeyudang, they called in police and other sort of hired thugs. They stuffed ballot papers, they switched ballots, they obstructed opposition politicians from campaigning. They intimidated opponents and basically rigged the whole election. And the election, of course, they won. And then they were the most outrageous fashion. And there was an absolute massive public outcry about this. So, that's basically what happened. That's the background.
Right. Right. And there were a series of events that led up to the protests. For one, there was the discovery of the corpse of Kim Ju-ryo, a student at Masan Commercial High School. That was one major event, of course, that many people have heard about.
Yeah.
And then there were student protests, right? Yeah. University student protests from students from, you know, Seoul National University, Korea University. Mm. And that was pretty important, was it not?
Well, yeah, but I mean, we should go back to where you are, where you're speaking from now, Busan, Masan. That's where that's where a lot of this started. There'd been demonstrations in Daegu before the elections, but after the elections, which are so outrageously rigged, Masan, there were bigger demonstrations in Masan. Now, a lot of people in Korea probably think that, you know, Gwangju is sort of the in Cheollado is kind of the hotbed for political violence and mass sort of protest, but it isn't. Busan, Masan's been is one of the important areas for this kind of political protest, and there's a strong left in Busan, Masan, where you are now. And in 1979, of course, there was a Puma Hangzheng, which sort of led to the end of Park Chung-hee's dictatorship. But going back to 1960, Masan, as you mentioned, the discovery of the corpse, and this is really important. This is a significant event because every sort of revolution needs a kind of catalyst, and that was it. Something to spire and inspire people to take to the streets. And the discovery of that corpse around April, several weeks after the actual demonstration, was inspired a lot of people, a lot of college students, and it was very young people taking part in these demonstrations up in Seoul. And it kind of fired people up. So then you had, if you look at the pictures back from 1960 and who was taking part, you get you have university students, but you also have the high school students in their uniforms, their colonial period uniforms, sitting on vehicles, commandeering vehicles and taking to the streets. So this is a remarkable sort of generational sort of conflict in some ways. You got this octogenarian Syngman Rhee's clinging on to power by all means necessary, and then facing him on the streets are these very young people, educated, literate, so that's what's remarkable about it in many ways. But I think
tell us if we can move forward a little bit. So there were obviously many protests, and then what happened? Ultimately, was he not forced to step down from power?
Well, yeah, he was. I mean, he responded as most dictators would respond, through force, and that can have one of two responses: either the people just go back home, or they take to the streets and it gets worse. And in his case, it got worse. So he sent in the police. They opened fire. They had live rounds. They opened fire on people. They had demonstrations in Seoul of up to 100,000 people and opened fire with live rounds, and they had hundreds wounded, maybe 100 killed in one demonstration. Now, but things got worse, so the repression didn't work. It didn't function, and this is quite a feature of revolutions. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. In this case, it didn't. So he called on the army to step in. Now it declared martial law. The army came in, and basically he ordered them to carry on doing what the police had been doing and open fire, and they refused. And once that happened, it's game over. Really.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's right. A key stage in any revolution is when the military either decides to support the crowd or turns against the crowd. So it's one or the other. In this case, they refuse to open fire.
And so in the aftermath, what happened to Lee Seung-man after this? Was from what I remember from reading, was he not kind of exiled?
Well, he went into exile. Hawaii?
Yeah, he went into exile.
That's right. He went with his wife, Francesca, to Hawaii. And I mean, one thing we should mention in this whole case, it wasn't just the people on the street or students who were demonstrating. There was a famous university lecturers demonstration, and that was supported by the public. So there was increasing sort of general sort of middle class support for this demonstration. But also the Americans intervened, which is quite interesting. And people generally thought that the ambassador and the chief of forces was supporting Syngman Rhee, Syngman Rhee's sort of departure. There's certain amount of in sort of evidence to suggest that, but basically he was ferried away, shipped off to Hawaii. He died 5 years later, I believe. And people have tried to sort of you know, look back on his legacy and find some positives. But he's not as divisive as Park Chung-hee in terms of his legacy. You know, to get people sort of supporting, you know, there's much more to support with Park Chung-hee. But in any case, that was the end of Syngman Rhee.
Yes, yes. And so for a final question and to wrap up our discussion, what do you think was the major impact of this April Revolution on Korean democracy as we know it now?
Well, I think it's very important. It's very important legacy, a very important influence. I mean, for one, initiated the Changmyeon government, a sort of brief 1 year period of sort of democratic rule. So it gave people a taste for this, but it also gave people, and this is the second sort of important thing, it gave people a taste of what could be achieved by taking to the street, by mass politics, by mass protest. And you mentioned earlier this protest by high school students against the construction next to their high school. So this has been sort of legacy, I think, of this, that protest can work, especially against sort of authoritarian government and the arbitrary rule of leaders when they get out of line. So those are two important influences. The third influence is it kind of shaped two very important institutions, key institutions in the sort of growth of democracy in South Korea. One is the military, but also the other is the students and the student movement. And these two institutions, which were kind of the most well-developed institutions at the time, came to sort of shape the future course of South Korea. And of course, they would come into conflict later on. Severely in 1979, and again in 1980, and then in 1987, when the students won. But these are important legacies. But also, yes. I think another important legacy and what shaped sort of future transition to democracy was the relationship with the United States, that the USA would step in if Korean leaders got out of hand. And that went badly in 1980, but it went a bit better in 1987. But the influence of these events by young people on the streets in Seoul and Busan and Masan and throughout the country are fundamental.
Yes, well, thank you so much for reminding us of the importance of what happened way back then in 1960. Thanks for joining us today. We do appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. This was Professor Andrew Jackson from Monash University. We talked about the April Revolution as it